All right, let's go ahead and talk about questions you have. First, just so I get a sense of who's in the room, how many of you are taking all three of my classes with me this quarter? Raise them up. Don't be shy. All right, there you go. Give them a round of applause. Very brave and courageous people. How many are in topics class immediately following this? So most of you are there. So let me speak to the group that's in topics in this class. Just as we get underway this quarter, there's, believe it or not, a great deal of overlap between both courses. This is a research class. The topics class, for all intents and purposes, is a political science course. And a lot of the topics that we'll talk about in here later, like the last couple of lectures, dovetail or overlap with what we're going to be talking about in topics. So just kind of have a heads up on that. For those of you that aren't in both, you know, we might be talking about stuff that we've talked about in topics or vice versa, and if you weren't in one or the other, you may not know what we're talking about, but it'll all kind of come together at some point. So, all right, so let's get to your questions. Questions you have. Yep.
Are there limitations on how long ago the case resolved or whatever the case is about?
Question is whether or not there's limitations on how old the case is. No, unless we're talking about, you know, 1895 or something. Okay. Next question. Yeah.
Is the CD format, do you still want a CD, or is it, I know you said you have to present the CD.
Yep.
As well?
Yes.
So instead of what's it called, the drive?
Correct. Okay. CD. Yep. Next. So, tequila, right? Oh, how you like that? Her question is what about authorship and having to do with field doctors and so forth. So here's the rules about this. If you're using a case from your peak office or a case from the field as opposed to one of the chop houses, then by default, the doctor you got the case from is an author on the paper and they are the lead author. Okay? So in this kind of situation, in academics, when you're doing work with somebody who's already in the field and so forth and established, you know, they're the senior, you're the junior, okay? So that's the default mode for this. Now, what you need to do if you're getting your case from a field doctor, peak doctor, so forth, is have a discussion with that doctor about their desires. They may not want their name on it, you know, as an author. They might want to be lead author. They might be fine with being secondary author. Okay, but they are an author on the paper. This brings up a couple of other things. If, you know, and understand this, that, you know, their role in the paper, obviously you want them to review drafts. Okay, you don't want to turn in a paper to me with somebody else's name on it and they haven't had the opportunity to review it, because that could be embarrassing for that person, all right, depending upon the quality of the paper. So you want to make sure you run drafts by them, all right? Bearing in mind that, you know, this person's participation could be as simple as reviewing that final draft and giving you the patient information and maybe answering your questions about the care that was delivered to that patient. And understanding that you wouldn't have the case were it not for the miracle that occurred under the, you know, care of that doctor. So the short answer to that question is yes. Did I catch it all? Yeah. All right. What else? Caleb?
Same question, but for like if it's my patient and outpatient, so I know that my clinic doc is their doc. So is it the same situation?
Well, you know, it used to be, and I don't know how things are run in the clinic these days, but it used to be that the patients belonged to the clinic, to the faculty doctor, and the faculty doctor provided the care, with the intern, you know, assisting and sometimes adjusting and things of that nature. My understanding is that's not really the way it works these days. My understanding is there's somebody there, but you're providing the care, okay? So same thing applies, though. You still need to have that conversation with them because technically it's their patient, right? You don't have a license to practice chiropractic, so it's not your patient, okay? Next question. Yes?
It says here that for off-campus patients, you need an informed consent from them. It doesn't apply for a patient that you get from
That's correct. So she's asking about informed consent. If the patient is, or if the person you're writing your case on is a patient in our clinic system, chop houses, the outreach clinics, whatever it happens to be, birth center, if that place is open yet. If the patient is a patient in one of our centers, actually cross birth center off of that because I don't know what their procedures are going to be. So, but if they're a patient in the chop house or the outreach clinics, then the patient has already signed an informed consent. Okay, it's on the initial intake form, which I'm sure you all have read in detail. And it says, I give permission for my records to be used for teaching and research purposes. So they've already given that consent. All right, the only time you need consent is if you're using a patient from the field, peak office, and so forth. Then that consent form's on Blackboard. You need to have the field doctor sign it, the patient needs to sign it, you need to sign it, and that needs to be turned in with the paper. This isn't really a big deal. Patients, typically, if you tell them that they are so interesting that you're going to write up a case study research paper on them, usually they're fascinated by that. Okay, so it's usually not an issue. The only time it's an issue is if the patient's not a current patient anymore and you can't get in touch with them. And so if you can't get in touch with them to get that consent, then you can't write about it. And that would be sort of an issue with the age of the case that I think you asked before. And I need you to keep in mind that this issue about the informed consent is a serious one. It's not a big deal, but it's a serious issue. Because it's federal law, okay? In fact, if I have a copy of your paper in my hands from a field doctor and there's no informed consent that's been signed for that, it's a violation of federal law, okay? So I'm not going to, it's like a hot potato. You know what I mean? If I get that paper, I'm gonna be like, I wanna get that out of my hands as quickly as possible. Right? I'm in the liability business, so last thing I want to do is violate federal law, okay? So make sure you get all that stuff squared away as early as possible, okay? Because if you don't have that informed consent, it means I can't accept your paper. It means you don't get a passing grade in the class, all right? Informed consent, yep.
What if the patient is deceased?
The patient is deceased. That's a new one. If the patient's deceased, I mean, thinking about this off the top of my head, then it would seem to me the consent issue would fall to their heirs or their estate or something of that nature. So the patient's deceased. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you on that one. Hopefully it wasn't because of the chiropractic care. It might make a good risk management case. And we've done those before. And by the way, that it's a good, I'm glad you brought it up because, you know, from time to time we have people that write up cases that where there wasn't necessarily a good outcome, or there was something that went wrong in the case, and the chiropractor did the right thing, and you know, the patient ended up, you know, alive or whatever had to happen. So those are also acceptable cases. Just come and talk to me about that if that's something that you want to do, so we can flesh it out and make sure that it's structured properly and everything else. Okay. Yep. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yep. Other questions?
If it's a case that's been reported on, published about, but there's significant changes in the case, can you report on those changes and reference the previous publication?
No. No. This has got to be from scratch. Yes. Okay, so he's asking about visceral cases. So I assume you mean like musculoskeletal, neck pain, back pain, headache type stuff, okay? Let me talk about those in general, and then hopefully within that I'll answer your question, and if I don't, make me come back to it, okay? So, and I'll flesh out the musculoskeletal cases and stuff like that if I need to as well, just ask me, but keep in mind that if you are writing your case about a patient with a musculoskeletal disorder, neck pain, back pain, headaches, and so forth, then you have some additional requirements. You have additional references. There's an additional 10 references that you're going to need to provide. You'll need to provide a separate review of literature section for that case. Okay, where you review the literature on whatever the musculoskeletal condition is or conditions are. Okay. If you're writing about a non-musculoskeletal case, let's use one of my favorite examples just because it's easy to talk about, infertility. Let's suppose that you had a patient that came in, and I'm going to mix in a couple of scenarios with this so we flesh this out. Patient comes in, it's a woman, and she comes in to see you or the field doctor with a chief complaint of low back pain. Okay, that's the reason she sought care. She gets under care, and back pain gets better, and during a reevaluation, the patient says, you know, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but my husband and I weren't able to get pregnant, and now I'm pregnant since undergoing chiropractic care. Do you think that has anything to do with it? Okay. So if your patient got pregnant as a result of the care, right? Okay. Not because of anything else. that might have went on. Then you can choose to focus the case on infertility. All right. You still have to discuss the musculoskeletal issues because you're writing about the whole patient. Okay? This is a case study, so you got to write about the whole patient and their whole experience. So you still have to talk about the low back pain and address the outcomes and so forth, but the case, the topic of the case can be infertility. Now, the next question is, do I need to provide more than 15 references in a visceral case, or in this case, a case on infertility? The answer is no, unless you want to get more than a C on the paper, okay? Let's understand something about the requirements for this paper in this class, despite whatever rumors there are out there. This class is easy, okay? All you're being asked to do is write simple case study. I'm assuming that you write narratives on your patients on a regular basis over there in the clinic. Yes? Right? The only difference is, although I haven't seen these narratives in a while, so you know, take that with a grain of salt. But the only difference should be in a well-written narrative between that and a case study is that the case study is bookended, right? Bookended by an intro, a discussion, and some references, okay? But essentially everything else about the patient is in the case study section, should be in a narrative anyway. So all you're really being able to, all you're being asked to do is write a good narrative, okay? If you write this paper on infertility and you have the minimum 15 references, let's understand that there are probably 25, maybe close to 30 papers now in the peer-reviewed literature on infertility in chiropractic. All right, so if you only include 15 papers in your reference section, you've missed half of what's out there. So how could you get a B or an A on that paper? You follow me? Okay. So the 15 references are a minimum. All right. 15 references get you a C in this class. Okay. The 25 references for the neck pain, back pain cases, musculoskeletal cases, if you have 25 references, that gets you a C. All right, because in order to go beyond and get a publishable paper, a B or an A category, on a musculoskeletal problem, you're going to have a really good review of the literature. I mean, we're talking about a couple of hundred references, because there's a lot of literature out there on chiropractic, spine manipulation, and musculoskeletal syndromes, especially neck pain and back pain and headaches, okay? So understand the 15 are minimum requirements. The question then becomes, well, if we're doing a visceral case, does that mean we don't need to do a review of literature? The answer to that question is no, you need to do a review of literature. Every single person that turns in a paper or that wants to get a grade, passing grade on this paper, has to do a review of literature on whatever the topic is that you're writing about, okay? The only difference is where that review of literature exists or how it's structured. In a musculoskeletal case, you're going to have a separate review of literature section following the introduction. In a visceral case or any other case, your review of literature just has to be somewhere. Has to be in your introduction, has to be, or in your discussion, or you could have a separate section if you wanted to. That's up to you, okay? But everybody has to do a review of literature. So in the infertility case, you're going to have to do a review of literature. If there's 30 case studies on infertility, you got a minimum bar right there of 30 papers that you're going to need to include, in addition to any papers that you need on epidemiology, allopathic management, economic issues, all that sort of stuff that have to be covered. Okay? Did I get to it? Did I answer it? Okay, so his question is about outcome measures more than anything, okay? So let's talk a little bit about this. And this is, you know, this applies to cases in the chop house, this applies to cases in the field, but generally speaking, things are a little worse in the field. And this is just a reality that you have to accept, okay? Chiropractors don't have good records. Okay, I look at chiropractors' records every day. Okay, I have never in over 20 years seen a set of chiropractic records where I got on the phone with the attorney and the attorney says, "How'd you like those records?" And I said, "Thumbs up." Okay, I've never said that. Okay, it's always actually the beginning conversation with an attorney where we make fun of the doctor's records. Okay, because this is what we got to deal with. Right, we got a doctor being sued, we got a doctor where the board is trying to take their license away from them, and we got shitty records, okay? That's a given, okay? Generally speaking, it's just how shitty are those records, okay? Do we just settle this case right now, right? Like a case recently where the doctor had no records. There's no point, right? There's no point in discovery. There's no point in depositions. There's no point in spending a lot of money to take this case through because there ain't no records, okay? So understand that if you're working with a field doctor, the records may not be what you want them to be. They might not be what you've been taught, hopefully, is the standard of care, all right? That's okay, all right? The key with the case that you're choosing is the outcome, okay? Look at that first. Was it a good outcome? You know, was this guy in a coma and you toggled him on the left and he woke up from the coma? That's a great outcome, okay? Oh, but we didn't document it very well. Well, okay, let's work with that, okay? The point is we got a good case here. Let's see if we can make, you know, lemonade out of these lemons, all right? So you want to take as many data points as you can possibly extract from the case, all right? They got leg checks, they got range of motion, they got x-rays, they got scans, whatever they have, the more the better. The more objective data that you have, the stronger the case, all right? The more subjective data you have, if you don't have objective data, the better the case, all right? And hopefully you got subjective and objective data. Hopefully you have data that is valid, objective, reliable, okay? You know, and let's understand this. There is a hierarchy in terms of data, okay? There is soft outcome measures, there is hard outcome measures. You can palpate somebody's back and think that you feel changes in muscle tone, or you can take a surface electrode, electromyography, and actually measure in microvolts the amount of muscle tone, okay? Which is more objective, right? We know it's the surface EMG. You could take your hand and put it on somebody's back and feel to see if there are temperature differences from one side to the other, okay? Or you could run a thermal scan up their back that measures them, you know, within 0.5 degrees Celsius, okay? One is more objective than the other, okay? So the more objective data you have, the better. How many do you need? You know, this is a case study. So, you know, you're writing about what you got. You got to do the best with what you've been given in this situation. If, let's use, for example, upper cervical. Let's say you got an upper cervical case. I like upper cervical from a research perspective, from a clinical perspective, because it's easy. It's easy. And it's analytical, okay? Upper cervical, they're taking an x-ray to look for misalignment, okay? They're using a thermal scan to look for autonomic dysfunction. Now here we got two very objective, very reliable procedures to measure components of vertebral subluxation. If we only had those two measures, well, you're golden, okay? If in addition to that, you've got some scanning palpation, you know, the literature on palpation is pretty much in the toilet, but if you did it and you got it, talk about it, okay? If you have posture, posture is objective, valid, and reliable measure, so talk about that. If you got leg checks, you know, that's a little, you know, voodoo stuff, but include it, okay? The bottom line is you got to use what you've been given on these cases, okay? Now, if you got nothing, you know, sometimes, I mean, every quarter there's two or three students that they get a case from the doctor, the doctor's all excited about it, they got this miracle case, and the student gets the records, and they're like, there's nothing here, right? All you have is what the doctor says, okay? In a situation like that, let's understand, and really in any situation with these cases, there is nothing stopping you from going back to the doctor and having a conversation about their care, okay? Maybe everything didn't get into the record, all right? That's okay. Records can be addendum, right? Records can be, have things added to them as long as that's done appropriately, okay? So there's nothing stopping you from having the doctor describe their technique or describe their methods to you. There's nothing stopping you from getting on the phone with the patient, meeting with the patient, let's say the history and the records isn't really that clear, or you're missing some elements of it. You're missing some elements of medical care that the patient had, something of that nature. Talk to the patient about it. I mean, obviously, you need to get permission from the doctor to talk to the patient and so forth, but meet with the patient, have a phone call with the patient, and just go through and review their history, review their outcomes with them. All right? Same goes for issues related to, let's say, you know, measuring quality of life and things of that nature. Let's use an example of a kid with autism. Let's say you got a case, whether here in our clinics or outside in the field, and the kid had autism, and or is diagnosed with autism, and went to the chiropractor, and he's talking better, he's more responsive, he's interacting better, whatever the outcomes were, okay? And the chiropractor documented this to some extent. You talk to the parents and you find out even more in terms of fleshing it out, in terms of how this kid has benefited from chiropractic. But you could take it a step further. There are health surveys that are out there for pretty much every disease known to man. I'm exaggerating, but the big ones. And these health surveys, like the SF-36, are you guys familiar with the SF-36, right? The SF-36 is one of the most valid and reliable health surveys that are available to you, okay? The problem is that you don't take it seriously. And I'm, you know, this is the collective you, okay? Maybe some of you do, okay? I'm just going by what I hear, okay, and what I see in the records. If you just give the patient a survey and say, you know, just fill this out, you know, it's another hoop we got to jump through, it's a pain in the ass, and blah, 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 okay? Well, what value is that going to be if that's the instructions you gave to the patient? Okay, as opposed to, Mrs. Jones, I need you to fill out this health survey, explain to them what the health survey is, explain to them the importance of filling this out to the best of their ability, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I mean, you're going to get different information based upon what you tell the patient with this. Okay, so if you don't have that survey, or let's say in autism, there's something called the Autism Treatment Evaluation Checklist. It's a valid and reliable questionnaire used in autism treatment. And let's suppose you didn't do that at the beginning of the care. Well, you can give it to them now. Nothing's stopping you. Okay, you can say, Mr. Patient, Mrs. Patient, I want you to fill out this survey about your son or your daughter based upon how they were before chiropractic care. I want you to just to the best of your recollection, okay? Have them fill it out. After they do that, you say, give them another one and say, now I want you to fill it out again, but I want you to fill it out based upon how your child is now. Is that ideal? Of course not. Do you have to come clean about that in the paper and say, listen, we didn't follow the protocol that makes this instrument valid and reliable, but we wanted to get some additional information, so here's what we got, okay? You know, understand something. This is a single case study. You cannot make any type of broad, sweeping generalizations about a single case study. The only thing you can say about a case study is this is what happened with this patient. It doesn't mean that that's going to happen to another patient. Okay? And you need to be careful about this when you're writing this up, okay? This is one of the biggest problems I see is where you try to generalize or make conclusions based on a case study that you cannot make from a case study, all right? Not only is that problematic for you in here in terms of writing this paper up, but it's also a problem for chiropractors in the field, okay? One of the things we'll be talking about this quarter and talking about in topics and in here is this issue of claims, making claims for chiropractic. This is a huge issue that you have no idea is even going on because you're living on chiropractic island in this big bubble where you're not exposed to reality by the people around you. Everybody's just pumping sunshine up your ass for the past 4 years, okay? you're about to leave Chiropractic Island, right? You're going to the mainland, right? And I can tell you, the mainland is very different from this island. They don't care about you, okay? So what's going on in this profession has a lot to do, a big thing that's going on has to do with these claims that people are making. It's very big over in the UK, Australia right now. People don't realize how big it is here in the United States because we have 50 regulatory boards. Australia and UK have one. So if something bad happens to one doctor, everybody knows about it. Something bad happens to one doctor in one state in this country, not too many people are going to hear about it. But I'm telling you, the same thing that's happening in the UK and Australia is happening here. So you probably heard about this guy in Australia that got in trouble for a video he posted about a child with colic and showed adjusting this child with colic, right? You can't do that. It's misleading, according to the regulatory boards in this country and in every other country on this planet, okay? So he got dinged pretty bad for this. Of course, chiropractors are outraged about it. They want to storm the castle. You know, I'm looking at where the hell you been for the past 30 years, right? The chiropractic cartel is taking control of this profession, and we've allowed this to happen. So you got to be very careful about these kinds of claims. Just understand what a case study tells you. It tells you something about this patient. Be careful. This brings up some other issues that we have to talk about. Be careful with your terminology. If you were in 12th quarter already with me last quarter or previously, you know that terminology is very important. The words that you use are very important. You need to make sure you understand what these words mean. Don't use words like correlation or association in an inappropriate fashion. For example, a case study can never show correlation. It can't. Okay? Correlation has a specific scientific meaning, okay, that cannot be discerned from a single case study, so you shouldn't be using those terms in a case study research paper. Okay? So be careful about languaging in that sense. Okay? Now what was the original question?
About data points.
Data points. We're still talking about data points. All right. Did we beat that to death or what? Yeah. All right. What else? Yes. The question is, do I want copies of your references? Good question. So you'll see in the course material, I think it tells you that you need to turn in copies of your references. But what I'm telling you here this morning is you don't. You don't need to turn in copies of your references. However, this is very important. This is a big however. You must have copies of your references. All right? So what happens is I'm reading your papers and I look at your reference section. Maybe it's a topic I'm interested in, something of that nature, and I contact you and I say, hey, bring me your references. I want to see those. And you don't have them, that's going to be a problem because that means you just committed academic misconduct, right? And it shouldn't take you 48 hours to get me those references because you should already have them in your hot little hand. Right? So make sure you actually have copies of your references and you have copies of the full papers. Don't just get the abstracts. All right? And I see hands up, but just something just came to mind about something I didn't say before relative to this reference stuff, and I just lost it. Go ahead. I'm going to want hard copies. Yep.
Is there any time requirement? If you get a case of field docs, any time requirement, how long they've been in practice?
Nope. Yes.
So when you're looking at references, there are a lot of new references to use.
There's a lot of what?
So if you said, for instance, facility.
Oh, let me interrupt you. So I just remembered what I lost. I was talking before about other sections of your paper, like epidemiology and things of that nature, okay? Do not use information from case studies to talk about the epidemiology of the disorder you're writing about. You got to go to the primary source. You got it? Okay? Because if you're using epidemiology, and I'm just using that as an example, because you should be going to the primary source for everything on this. If you're relying on somebody that wrote a case study 5 years ago and their review of the epidemiology of infertility, well, some of that information can be outdated, and the person that wrote that case study is not an authority on infertility. They're a chiropractor, probably. You got it? So make sure you're going to the original sources for all this stuff. If you are referencing a paper, let's say you're referencing Kent, and he wrote this paper on models of vertebral subluxation, and he's talking about dyspnesis, and you think that's cool because you never heard that term before, and so you want to talk about dyspnesis, don't reference Kent. You got to go back to Watmore and Coli, okay, as the source for dyspnesis. All right. The reason is Kent could have got it wrong. I doubt it because Kent doesn't get anything wrong. Trust me, I know him. But he could have. Okay. Somebody lesser than him could have made an inaccurate interpretation of what Moore and Coli said about dyspnesis, and now you are perpetuating that myth. This is one of the problems in the scientific literature. Okay, it's a very big problem in chiropractic because chiropractors just see something on Facebook. Oh, that must be true. Let me spread that around. Right? And we get all this bullshit out there that, I mean, in 2 seconds you can refute it. Okay? Sorry, go ahead.
Do you expect to set up the 3 articles and anything that's paid for?
Yeah. So his question is, what about, you know, if we got to pay for something or whatever? That's not my issue. I'm sorry. Now, that sounds cold and mean-spirited and all that stuff, but that's the way it is. Okay? This is research, right? So, you know. Go ahead.
Can you use cases from out the country?
You can use cases from anywhere on this planet. Yep.
The case study has 2 chief complaints resolved.
Good question. So she's asking about a case that might have 2 chief complaints. The reality is, you know, as Dr. R. Bruce Fox says, patients are entitled to more than one disease. You might have a patient with multiple comorbidities. Right, multiple musculoskeletal complaints, multiple visceral and musculoskeletal complaints. So this goes back to what I said before. You're writing about the whole patient. So you are responsible to write about everything. Okay? Now, chances are that if a patient has multiple comorbidities, one or two of them are worse than the others. And again, you can focus on those things, but you have to talk about everything else. Okay. Yep. You should summarize it. Okay? So here's what I don't want, okay? Here's what I definitely don't want, and you'll never really see this in a case study paper. Because nobody wants it, is a visit-by-visit breakdown. Okay, on visit number one, we did this. On visit number two, and then you go on for 4 years. We don't want that. Okay? Your job as the writer is to take this person's history and what happened, their outcomes, and summarize it. Okay? Try to pull everything together. Okay? Now, there are some areas where you've got to be specific, okay? And that has mostly to do with technique, all right? Technique and outcomes, right? So relative to technique, and we'll get into this in much more detail next week, relative to technique, you need to give a broad overview of the technique and provide references to support that technique from the peer-reviewed literature. And keep in mind, you know, class notes and things like that are not from the peer-reviewed literature. You can use them as references. You can use them as sources. But that means that you need to have more than 15 peer-reviewed references, okay? Because you can use things like websites and textbooks and so forth, but those all have to be in addition to the 15 peer-reviewed references, all right? Yes? It could be a case study. It could be a descriptive study. It could be a textbook. It could be, and like I said, it could be class notes. But when you get into textbooks and class notes and websites and stuff like that, those are going to have to be in addition to the peer-reviewed literature. And, you know, he's bringing up a good point, is that other than a few techniques, very, very few, they don't have any peer-reviewed literature. Right? This is one of the problems in your profession, in our profession. We learn technique based upon a bunch of dead people who created these proprietary techniques and then went out and sold them to make a living. And that's what we still have going on, right? We have all these technique gurus that are out there making money from their seminars, but they have no peer-reviewed literature, no science, no research to back up their technique. But chiropractors are more than willing to pay them money to go to these seminars to learn stuff that hasn't been validated or been shown to be reliable and so forth, right? There's only a handful of research, handful of techniques that have, you know, done this work, okay? So you've got to be careful with that. Yep. Yes, so when you're talking about outcome measures, you have to talk about your outcome measures and what the reliability and validity are of those outcome measures. So if you're using, if thermography was involved in your case, if surface EMG was involved in your case, and so forth, then you need to discuss those. We'll go into that a little bit more next week as well, but that's sort of a general overview of that. Yes? Yeah, you're not going to reference it. You're just going to reference the blood work as part of what was done. And this brings up another point. If your patient, you know, whatever it is you're writing about is also under other providers' care, you need to write about that care. You need to write about the other care that was provided to these patients. And again, we'll go into this in much more detail next week. But that might involve you needing to request the records from that other healthcare provider, which is only a problem because you're not already doing that. You know, the reality is you should already be doing that. Every patient under your care in the clinic over there that has other healthcare providers, you should have requested those records, reviewed those records, and incorporated them into the management of your patient. That's the standard of care, okay? To the extent you are or not doing that is the extent to which you are or not in compliance with the standard of care, right? They may not care about it over there, but I guarantee you, in the real world, they care about it. That's the bottom line. So I would suggest that you request those records and get on it quickly so that you have time to get them, okay? And there should be a process or a procedure over there for requesting records from other healthcare providers. Yep. Then you got a situation of hearsay. Then you're going to report what the patient is telling you, okay? But that's a weakness in your case. It's going to be a big weakness in your case because I'll use a typical example. Just from clinical practice, not necessarily from the research world, right? Patient comes in, patient's got, you know, a history of headaches, and of course, every patient that has headaches thinks their headaches are the worst in the world, and so everybody thinks they have migraines, right? And so the patient comes in and tells you, oh, I have migraines, you write down patient has migraines, and you never discern whether or not those are really migraines or not. You're just listening to what the patient tells you. Patient doesn't know what the hell a migraine is, right? migraine has very specific characteristics that make it distinct from all other types of headaches, right? This is why you learn all the different types of headaches, I assume, right? Okay, so you got to get the best information you can. And like I said, wherever there's a weakness, you should come clean with it. Okay, what's next? Yes. Great. So let's talk about the wellness, quote unquote, wellness patient. When I talk about the wellness patient, I'm talking about a real wellness patient. Okay? If a patient has health issues, okay, then they're not a wellness patient in this sense. Okay? But let's pretend that you have a patient that has no health problems, okay, and comes in and says, I want to have my spine checked for vertebral subluxations. How many have had that happen? Yeah, right. One person. Okay? The reality is that 72% of people go to chiropractors because they have musculoskeletal complaints. That's the reality, okay? And the rest of them have some type of visceral problem or something else, okay? So most people that you're taking care of are going to have some type of problems, okay? But if you have a person that comes in and has no health issues, and you go through your history and there's nothing there, and you examine them, and you determine that they have objective criteria of vertebral subluxation, you got yourself a case. Okay. In fact, we need those kind of cases in the scientific literature in chiropractic. Okay. We need to have evidence that the standard of care for managing a patient is the sole existence of a vertebral subluxation absent any other symptom or disorder. Okay? Including asymptomatic subluxation. Because in a true wellness patient like we're talking about, these subluxations are asymptomatic. Because if they're not, that means they have neck pain, back pain, headaches, or some visceral problem or something else. All right? So if you've got a patient and your case involves subluxation only, that's great. So now your case is going to revolve around subluxation is the condition. Okay? And let's get something straight about this. Okay? Vertebral subluxation is a pathophysiological process. Are you with me? Vertebral subluxation is a pathophysiological process. That means it is a disease. Are you with me? You with me? Because I know that people blow all this bullshit up your ass that, you know, subluxation is not a disease and it's non-therapeutic and all this other garbage, okay? Subluxation is a pathophysiological process. If you tell me that it's not, the burden is on you to tell me what it is then, right? I mean, if you want to get into all this stuff, well, subluxation is, you know, less light and all this other stuff. You know, have fun with that before the state board, okay? I would suggest that you never get a license and just call what you're doing something else, okay? So vertebral subluxation ends up being the centerpiece of the case. Now, hopefully in every one of your cases, subluxation is the centerpiece of your case, all right? Because that's the reason to be as far as chiropractic is concerned, as far as I'm concerned. So then you're going to talk about, you know, like I used before, I used upper cervical as an example. You're going to talk about your x-ray, your thermal scan, your posture analysis, your scanning palpation, your leg checks, and then the outcomes related to that. Okay? Did that answer that? Whoever asked that. Okay, what else? Yes?
In regards to the requesting permission to replace previously polished materials, how does that differentiate from
Well, let's say I don't know. Let's say you're doing a paper and has to do with the brachial plexus, and you want to include a picture of the brachial plexus. Well, you know, you got to call up Stanley Hoppenfeld and or his publisher and get permission to reproduce that. Okay, you cannot reproduce something that anybody holds a copyright to. Okay, right. So those of you who heard the rumors about last quarter where people got a hold of my old tests and were circulating them around. Well, I hold a copyright to my old tests. So my copyright was violated. You got it? Okay. Any my slides, my presentation, everything you have on Blackboard, I own that. That belongs to me. If you reproduce that without my permission, then you violated my copyright. Okay? Does that answer that? What else? Sure. Yep. Yep.
In a pregnancy case, if the patient is presenting for care during pregnancy and they have a musculoskeletal symptom, are we doing a brief review on each of those things?
Yes. Short answer is yes. Let's just very quickly talk about the pregnancy issue. How many of you, I asked you to think about cases you might have, how many are thinking about a case involving breech presentation, Webster technique, that kind of thing? Anybody got any of those cases? There'll probably be a half a dozen of those by the end of the quarter. Just make sure you understand your number one priority is to review the paper by Jeannie Ohm and Joel Alcantara on Webster's technique. Okay, make sure you review it. They wrote it a couple of years ago. It's published in the Journal of Pediatric and Maternal and Family Health. You know, they're the experts. Joel and Jeannie are the experts on Webster's technique. I don't care, you know, who else is writing about it or teaching it or whatever. They are the experts on it. And you need to be careful with your languaging, okay, because you don't want to get your doctor, if you're using a field doctor, and you don't want to get anybody in this clinic in trouble, you don't want to get people in trouble. So you don't want to be talking about turning babies, right? Webster's is not a breech turning technique, okay? Now, it's fine that you adjusted them, administered Webster's, and the baby had a good outcome. They were no longer breech. But you're just reporting on that as an outcome. You're not making any assertion that the adjustment caused that turning. Okay? I know this sounds a little freaky, but you need to understand that if you're turning babies, then you're practicing obstetrics. And that's against the law in every state in this country except Oregon for chiropractors. Okay? And no malpractice insurance company covers obstetric care. All right, and this goes as far as if you take your two little hands and you place them on the belly of a pregnant woman to determine the position of a fetus, you have just practiced obstetrics. You know how much malpractice insurance costs for an obstetrician a year? $500,000 a year. $250,000, you know, depending if they've had any claims, that kind of stuff, right? So you're not covered for it, and no state allows you to do it, okay? So be careful with that, all right? Yeah?
Slightly off topic, but in Oregon, how would a doctor be?
Well, in Oregon, you got to take an additional 600 hours that you can, I think, through Western States Chiropractic College, they have a program, and then take an exam, and then you can practice obstetrics in Oregon. Yep? Enough that we know by the time we're done how this condition, disease, disorder is managed allopathically. Not just allopathically, allopathic management, alternative management, acupuncture, herbal, whatever it happens to be, you know, you got to cover all the bases on that. Yep.
As a student writing this paper,
if it's in the field, your field doctor's office would have to do that. And you'd have to get their permission and all that stuff, yeah.
So if it's a friend of ours and they request all of their records and we don't know the doctor, are we allowed to use their case?
I'm not following the scenario.
So if a friend is the patient with the condition, and I don't know their doctor, but they request all of the records from their doctors and give me permission to use that case.
Well, the doctor's got to sign that informed consent. And, you know, if I'm the doctor and you're doing stuff without me knowing about it, I'm not going to be happy about that. So I'd be careful with that. Other questions? Yep.
So just to make it clear, if we're using one of our patients in the clinics, either from student or outpatient clinic, I have to have my advisor doctor be the first name on the...
Well, you have to have a conversation with them and see if they're even interested in participating. If they're not, then they're not going to be an author on the paper, no.
But they don't have to.
No, absolutely not. Nope.
How does the revision process work?
As far as throughout the quarter?
Yeah, throughout the quarter.
So you have the opportunity to turn in a draft of your paper at any point during the quarter. So if you already have a draft, you know, by Friday, you could turn it in on Monday and we will start reviewing drafts. The deadline for reviewing drafts is prior to the beginning of ninth week, okay? Prior to the beginning of ninth week. And make sure you're clear on this. If you wait until, you know, that end of that seventh week, eighth week, that last 2 weeks before that deadline to turn in a draft, it's got to be a complete draft. Okay, for all intents and purposes, you have to believe that the paper is done and you just want me to, you know, look it over, sprinkle holy water on it, bless it, and, you know that you don't have anything to worry about. Okay? I'm not going to review partial drafts, you know, as we get closer to the end of the quarter. Okay, because then I'm just reading that paper again in a week and a half. There's just too many people in the class, too much to do. So you're going to be turning in complete drafts at that point. So that once I review it, I know I'm done with that paper. I don't even have to look at it again. Okay. But prior to that, you can turn in drafts of abstracts. You can turn in drafts of sections of the paper, things of that nature. Okay. One nuance to this, and this is all in the technical requirements and on Blackboard, but just to be sure, if you turn in a draft, 99% of the time, you're going to get that draft back in track changes mode from me. I'm going to do my suggestions, comments, edits, whatever, right in your paper using track changes mode. If you want to turn in another draft, you need to turn it in track changes mode so that I can see what I suggested to fix, and then I can verify that you fixed it, and then know that the other stuff is all new, okay? If you turn in a second draft and it's not in track changes, I'm not reviewing it, because that means I got to start over again, okay? Other questions? Yep. Nope, email. Yep, by email. All drafts by email. Let me, in the few minutes we have left, let me just go through, see if there's any big things that we missed here. Okay, I'm going to fly through this very quickly. Going to double space all parts of the manuscript, each section clone on a new page, two paper copies. Printed copies of your paper must be single-sided only, right? Let's kill all the trees. Don't worry about the trees. We're going to eventually find a new planet to live on, so don't worry about it. Make sure you pay attention to, you know, font and font size and font styles and all that stuff. 15 references we talked about. We talked about neck pain, back pain, headaches. illustrations, prints we talked about. I don't want to get into talking about ugly stuff this morning, but, you know, funny thing that came out of some of the hearings, conduct review hearings I heard last quarter that I sat in on, was the admission by a couple of people that there are people at this institution that will write your paper for a fee. Yeah. These are your colleagues, by the way, that are going to be representing chiropractic soon. Okay? You might get away with it. Okay? You might not. Okay? I don't think you want to spend your last couple of quarters dealing with a conduct review issue. Okay? So no plagiarism, no fabrication, don't have somebody else write your paper, all that sort of stuff, right? And it's with the technical requirements for this course, it's pretty hard to have somebody else write this thing. Spelling, grammar, punctuation, sentence construction, okay? You need to check this very carefully, okay? It's a technical requirement. Okay, so make sure that you use appropriate grammar, sentence construction, all that sort of stuff, okay? And make sure you understand spell check doesn't get everything. This is all self-explanatory. We're doing a structured abstract, 150 to 250 words. Here are the headings for that structured abstract. Don't make up your own. These are the headings. Abstract, introduction, case report, discussion, conclusion, references. You can include other headings or subheadings as needed to construct and relay your case. Like, for example, in the case report section, if you want to get a B or an A in the paper or you want to try to get something published, then you're going to need to have subheadings. You know, history, physical exam, diagnostic testing, what was the final diagnosis, you know, have these subheadings. These subheadings make it easier for the reader to digest. Make sure you understand that you're not writing for you, you're writing for somebody who's going to read it, okay? And at a minimum, that's me, okay? So you want to make it easy for me to read your paper, okay? We'll talk about intervention and outcome in more detail next week. References, make sure that you follow the uniform requirements, aka Vancouver style, okay, to the letter, every period, every colon, every semicolon, every apostrophe, everything, okay? Cover letter, you're going to submit a cover letter, that's self-explanatory. We talked about the headaches, neck pain, we'll cover that again next week a little bit. Review of literature, talked about drafts, track changes. Let me go through a couple of these things quickly. Make sure that you staple this paper, okay? If, you know, a paper goes missing because you didn't secure it properly, then, you know, you have an incomplete submission. Single-sided only. Reference numbers should fall outside the closing punctuation marks. No parentheses around reference numbers. No space between closing punctuation marks and reference numbers. So this is the reference section format. Sequential referencing, 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the way it's done, right? You're not gonna, if you have 12 references, you're not gonna number all the way to 12. You're gonna abbreviate it 1 through 12. The C in chiropractic is not capitalized at the beginning of the sentence, right? Just because we think that we're changing the world through chiropractic doesn't mean we get to change the rules of grammar, okay? The C in chiropractic is not capitalized. All this slang stuff that you guys are used of, and this is the one I see, I mean, every quarter I read is based off of this and based off of that. Get rid of it, okay? These are very important. Do not use the term removed subluxations unless you have objective evidence they were actually removed. Do not use the term corrected subluxations unless you have objective evidence you actually corrected them. And do not use the term reduced unless you have objective evidence you actually reduced it, okay? Because it stands to reason that any reasonable person that says we corrected the subluxation is going to want to be able to see a before and after correction, okay? Same thing with reduced. The remove thing, I don't even understand what that means, right? What'd you do? You went in there, did some bloodless surgery and took it out? It's meaningless, okay? But we use these terms all the time. They don't belong in a research paper. Make sure you put your CD in a hard plastic case so it doesn't get damaged, because I have to be able to open it and check that there's something actually on it. Make sure that your tables, figures, legends, and anything else that you use have descriptions to the extent that they could stand alone, okay? Don't use names of clinics in the body of the paper. Don't use names of doctors in the body of the paper. Don't use dates or days. Refer instead to time frames where necessary. Don't put unnecessary information in your references, right? If this shows up in your reference, that means that you copied and pasted it, and it's an incorrect reference. Don't use first names of authors in references. Don't use slang of any type. Avoid improper use of terms, for example, correlation, association, validity, reliability, etc. We talked about that. Don't give visit-by-visit breakdowns. Diagnosis. In your case report section, after you tell us the history, after you tell us the exam, after you tell us the further diagnostic workup that was done, all of that should culminate in a diagnosis or diagnoses. Okay, so those need to be there. Avoid the overuse of flowery or extreme adjectives, such as the patient had an incredible response to care. Okay, what I would urge you is if you're writing and you write an adjective, ask yourself if that adjective can be objectified. Okay, can you objectify incredible? If you can, then you should really just be talking about the outcome measurements that you're saying were incredible, okay? Don't describe them as incredible. You don't see that type of stuff in research papers. SOAP notes. SOAP notes are related to documentation. They are not the way you measure outcomes, okay? There is some standing statement that's made in the clinics around here. It's just incorrect. All right, any other questions? Yes. What's that? He's asking if you need to get your topic approved. No, you have all the requirements of the course. I don't need to approve any topics. I mean, if you want feedback on it, I'm happy to give it. Okay, we'll see you next week.
And the doctor that I have is Kayla Phelps, but I don't have, like, x-rays or huge outcome measures to be able to, you know what I mean?
It's all right, yeah, you're a pretty kid, right, yeah, so you'll just use what you have.
Okay, yeah. Cool, I'll come to your office and maybe show you some of the stuff I have and make sure it's okay.
Sure.